Chapter 32. Vinicius went directly to the house in which Miriam lived. Before the gate he met Nazarius, who was confused at sight of him, but greeting the lad cordially, he asked to be conducted to his mother's lodgings. Besides Miriam, Vinicius found Peter, Glaucus, Crispus, and Paul of Tarsus, who had returned recently from Fregellae. At sight of the young tribune, astonishment was reflected on all faces, but he said, "Greet you in the name of Christ, whom ye honor. May his name be glorified forever," answered they. "I have seen your virtue, and experienced your kindness, hence I come as a friend." "And we greet thee as a friend," answered Peter. "Sit down, Lord, and partake of our refreshment, as a guest. I will sit down and share your repast, but first listen to me, thou Peter, and thou Paul of Tarsus, so that ye may know my sincerity. I know where Lydia is. I have returned from before the house of Linus, which is near this dwelling. I have a right to her given me by Caesar. I have at my houses in the city nearly 500 slaves. I might surround her hiding place and seize her, still I have not done so, and will not. For this reason the blessing of the Lord will be upon thee, and thy heart will be purified," said Peter. "I thank thee. But listen to me further. I have not done so, though I am living in suffering and sadness. Before I knew you, I should have taken her undoubtedly, and held her by force, but your virtue and your religion, though I do not profess it, have changed something in my soul, so that I do not venture on violence. I know not myself why this is so, but it is so, hence I come to you, for ye take the place of Lydia's father and mother, and I say to you, give her to me as wife, and I swear, that not only will I not forbid her to confess Christ, but I will begin myself to learn his religion." He spoke with head erect and decisively, but still H.C. was moved, and his legs trembled beneath his mantle. When silence followed his words, he continued, as if wishing to anticipate an unfavorable answer, "Know what obstacles exist, but I love her as my own eyes, and though I am not a Christian yet, I am neither your enemy nor Christ's. I wish to be sincere, so that you may trust me. At this moment it is a question of life with me, still I tell you the truth. Another might say, baptize me, I say, enlighten me. I believe that Christ rose from the dead, for people say so who love the truth, and who saw him after death. I believe, for I have seen myself, that your religion produces virtue, justice, and mercy, not crime, which is laid to your charge. I have not known your religion much so far. A little from you, a little from your works, a little from Lydia, a little from conversations with you. Still I repeat, that it has made some change in me. Formerly I held my servants with an iron hand. I cannot do so now. I knew no pity, I know it now. I was fond of pleasure. The other night I fled from the pond of Agrippa, for the breath was taken from M. Tilda through disgust. Formerly I believed in superior force. Now I have abandoned it. Know ye that I do not recognize myself. I am disgusted by feasts, wine, singing, C-I-T-H-A-R-Tilda, garlands, the court of Caesar, naked bodies, and every crime. When I think that Lydia is like snow in the mountains, I love her the more, and when I think that she is what she is through your religion, I love and desire that religion. But since I understand it not, since I know not whether I shall be able to live according to it, nor whether my nature can endure it, I am in uncertainty and suffering, as if I were in prison." Here his brows met in wrinkle of pain, and a flush appeared on his cheeks. After that he spoke on with growing haste and greater emotion, "Sec, I am tortured from love and uncertainty. Men tell me that in your religion there is no place for life, or human joy, or happiness, or law, or order, or authority, or Roman dominion. Is this true? Men tell me that ye are madmen, but tell me yourselves what ye bring. Is it a sin to love, a sin to feel joy, a sin to want happiness? Are ye enemies of life? Must a Christian be wretched? Must I renounce Lydia? What is truth in your view?" Your deeds and words are like transparent water, but what is under that water? Ye see that I am sincere. Scatter the darkness. Men say this to me also. Greece created beauty and wisdom, Rome created power, but they, what do they bring? Tell, then, what ye bring. If there is brightness beyond your doors, open them. We bring love, said Peter. And Paul of Tarsus added, If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but of not love, I am become sounding brass. But the heart of the old apostle was stirred by that soul in suffering, which, like a bird in a cage, was struggling toward air and the sun. Hence, stretching his hand to Vinicius, he said, Whoso knocketh, to him will be opened. The favor and grace of God is upon thee. For this reason I bless thee, thy soul and thy love, in the name of the Redeemer of mankind. Vinicius, who had spoken with enthusiasm already, sprang toward Peter on hearing this blessing, and an uncommon thing happened. That descendant of Quirites, who till recently had not recognized humanity in a foreigner, seized the hand of the old Galilean, and pressed it in gratitude to his lips. Peter was pleased. For he understood that his sowing had fallen on an additional field, that his fishing net had gathered in a new soul. Those present, not less pleased by that evident expression of honor for the apostle of God, exclaimed in one voice, Praise to the Lord in the highest. Vinicius rose with a radiant face, and began, See that happiness may dwell among you, for I feel happy, and I think that he can convince me of other things in the same way. But I will add, that this cannot happen in Rome. Caesar is going to Antium and I must go with him, for I have the order. Ye know that not to obey is death. But if I have found favor in your eyes, go with me to teach your truth. It will be safer for you than for Rome. Even in that great throng of people, ye can announce your truth in the very court of Caesar. They say that act as a Christian. And there are Christians among Praetorians even, for I myself have seen soldiers kneeling before thee, Peter, at the Nomentan gate. In Antium I have a villa, where we shall assemble to hear your teaching, at the side of Nero. Glaucus told me, that ye are ready to go to the end of the earth for one soul, so do for me, what ye have done for those for whose sake ye have come from Judea, do it, ere it desert not my soul. Hearing this, they began to take counsel, thinking with delight of the victory of their religion, and of the significance for the pagan world which the conversion of an Augustan, and a descendant of one of the oldest Roman families, would have. They were ready, indeed, to wander to the end of the earth for one human soul, and since the death of the master they had, in fact, done nothing else. Hence a negative answer did not even come to their minds. Peter was at that moment the pastor of a whole multitude, hence he could not go. But Paul of Tarsus, who had been in Arisium and Phrygia not long before, and who was preparing for a long journey to the east to visit churches there, and freshen them with a new spirit of zeal, consented to accompany the young tribune to Antium. It was easy to find a ship there going to Grecian waters. Vinicius, though sad because Peter, to whom he owed so much, could not visit Antium, thanked him with gratitude, and then turned to the old apostle with his last request, knowing Lydia's dwelling, said he, I might have gone to her and asked, as is proper, whether she would take me as husband should my soul become Christian, but I prefer to ask thee, O apostle, permit me to see her, or take me thyself to her. I know not how long I shall be in Antium, and remember that near Caesar, no one is sure of tomorrow. Petronius himself told me that I should not be altogether safe there. Let me see her before I go, let me delight my eyes with her, and let me ask her if she will forget my evil and return good. Peter smiled kindly and said, But who could refuse thee a proper joy, my son? Vinicius stooped again to Peter's hands, for he could not in any way restrain his overflowing heart. The apostle took him by the temples and said, Ave, no fear of Caesar, for I tell thee, that a hair will not fall from thy head. He sent Miriam for Lydia, telling her not to say who was with them, so as to give the maiden more delight. It was not far. So after a short time those in the chamber saw among the myrtles of the garden Miriam leading Lydia by the hand. Vinicius wished to run forth to meet her, but at sight of that beloved form happiness took his strength, and he stood with beating heart, breathless, barely able to keep his feet, 100 times more excited than when for the first time in life he heard the Parthian arrows whizzing round his head. She ran in, unsuspecting, but at sight of him, she halted as if fixed to the earth. Her face flushed, and then became very pale. She looked with astonished and frightened eyes on those present. But round about she saw clear glances, full of kindness. The Apostle Peter approached her and asked, Ija, dost thou love him as ever? A moment of silence followed. Her lips began to quiver like those of a child who is preparing to cry, who feels that it is guilty, but sees that it must confess the guilt. Answer, said the Apostle. Then, with humility, obedience, and fear in her voice, she whispered, kneeling at the knees of Peter, do. In one moment Vinicius knelt at her side. Peter placed his hands on their heads, and said, Ove each other in the Lord, and to his glory, for there is no sin in your love. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.